it is over. After 8 seasons, 73 episodes, and way too many characters busting out the phrase bend the knee all the time, HBO's Game of Thrones is over. Fan reaction to these final episodes has been mixed, but maybe that's the point. I'm Glenn Weldon. There's a lot to unpack, so we're talking the finale of Game of Thrones on this episode of Pop Culture Happy Hour.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Luminary, the only place you can listen to the new podcast Anthem from John Cameron Mitchell and Brian Weller. Anthem is a podcast musical with 31 original songs delivered by 40 actors, including Tony Award winners Glenn Close and Patti LuPone. Listen to Anthem and other original podcasts only on Luminary. Visit luminary.link/happyhour for your first 2 months of Luminary's premium content free. Cancel anytime. Terms apply.
Welcome back. Joining me in the studio at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Time is Weekend Edition Books Editor Barry Hardiman. Hey, Barry.
Hey.
Also with us is All Things Considered host Audie Cornish. Hello, Audie.
Hello, hello.
And joining us from Florida is NPR's TV critic Eric Deggans. Hey, Eric.
I come to you from the kingdom of the South.
There we go. There we go.
It's Dorn.
Putting on some Dorn spin. I like that.
It's on brand.
We're going to spoil the heck out of this finale. So come back when you've seen it, because we're going to be talking these characters' final fates. Let's start with Arya, who goes on a cruise. And then there's Sansa, who becomes queen in the North. A lot of people saw that coming, I think. Jon gets sent to the wall without a supper. Bran ends up sitting on the slag heap that was once the Iron Throne. Dany is killed by Jon, and Tyrion survives. I don't think a lot of people saw that coming either. Already, in the reaction to this show, already going up to this finale, there has been this conventional wisdom that's already calcified, which is that they're rushing through this final season and they're hitting plot beats without actually building any character stuff. That is such conventional wisdom. I want to move past it. I want to start by asking what you liked about these final episodes. So, Barry, let's go with you. Anything stood up?
First of all, the show always looks wonderful. Mm-hmm. And I do really appreciate that. Even in an episode like The Bells, which I had many problems with, there were images that stood out that were just gorgeous. This last episode, the dragon moments.
Yeah.
Drogon nudging Daenerys, yep. Dead Daenerys. I found myself for perhaps the one time during the episode feeling just slightly moved.
Mm-hmm.
It always looks great. I will say, I still think that there's so much charisma in some of the actors, even with some of them rode just northward, still looking the way they always
sure.
look. But, you know, they're still...
Emo John.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
God bless him and his hair. It is well moisturized, but that's about it. I still do like to look at Tyrion's face working on, you know, granted that, you know, that maybe the material he wasn't working with was terrific, but there still is a lot of charisma in these actors, and I like to see that. The season writ large, I think, still tried to hold to the things that were good about the series in general, which was that, you know, ruling is hard and, you know, death is unexpected and brutal and often weird and untidy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those things were great. And I still think for me, and I know this seems odd, but as I look back, the moments that I really do love Game of Thrones are actually the ones that have some humor to them.
Mm-hmm.
So I know people probably thought that the chair moving around scene was silly and whatever, but it kind of reminded me of a simpler time, Pod and the brothel,
sure.
that kind of thing that I really, really loved. So that stuff still is there. I love looking at Bronn and all of those things. And for me, that's great.
Audie, what'd you like?
I think that the show, for people who like politics, they've always sort of liked what Game of Thrones nods to. And I think with this season essentially saying that, hey, all this time you thought you were on a hero's journey with Daenerys, this young woman who was seeking to be queen. And in the end, she's a tyrant, and you realize you've been on the journey of like a rebel leader who becomes a dictator. This is why, you know, people like Elizabeth Warren write essays about Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
And we've always been, that community has always been attached to the show for that reason. And I think the show stuck the landing in those aspects. And I agree with Barry that the visual effects and some of the images, you know, if the show had the sound off, it would be just as compelling to kind of watch, probably even more so in some instances. So, yeah, I think that in the end, they got back to some of the ideals, you know, a story about a family. and you get to see these children and this family, in a way, avenge their father and all become leaders in their own right. And that was really sweet. Now, I'm sure we'll get to some of the critiques that, yep. that go on further. You know, I think the big question of whether yes. or not the journey was the destination there. But, you know, I'm not going to lie and say that I didn't think that they came to a satisfying ending of sorts.
So, yeah, just to come back to the visuals, there's a scene at the Red Keep where Daenerys walks to the head of the stairs and behind her Drogon spreads his wings. And as Audie was saying, it is not subtle, but I ate it up with a big old spoon. That was great.
I liked it.
Eric, what'd you like?
Well, first, I want to talk a little bit about what you said about the storytelling being too rushed. I think people forget that this was initially supposed to be 13 episodes that all played together. Mm-hmm. And then at some point, HBO or the producers, they both decided to split them in half, and seven aired. And then we had a two-year break, and then we got these last six. Mm-hmm. And I think part of the problem is that the storytelling still seemed to be kind of built for that original 13 playing in sequence, but we had a two-year break between the setup and the finale. So I think the stuff that felt rushed was that they kind of had all this stuff set up to sort of pay off a 13-episode season, and instead it became a six-episode season that felt too rushed. Mm-hmm. What I loved was the acting of the best actors, and in particular, Peter Dinklage.
Yeah.
This
well,
guy
lucky you.
Is amazing.
Because this whole episode was a lot of Peter Dinklage's
face. A lot
Dinklage's
of his big
face.
Eyes.
Yeah.
I would refer to a scene in the previous episode. Him with his brother Jaime sort of, you know, bearing his soul and explaining why he's always stood up for Jaime. And those two actors together, I thought that was an amazing scene. Peter Dinklage has always done a great job on this show, but I feel like he's really done a great job in these final episodes and has turned in some of the best acting work that he's done on the mm-hmm. show.
So let's go the other direction. Barry, I mean, was the rush nature of it the main disappointment you had, or was, like, I'm not going to put words in your mouth. What was your?
Let me think about what the main disappointment was. Well, I mean, actually, I'll be honest. I don't need it to be perfect. I'm not mad at them.
Right.
It's fine.
Right.
It's storytelling. As Tyrion said, it's just stories. I thought he was going to start a podcast at
yep.
some point. I was like, this is really nerve-wracking. But in any case, I guess the thing that I found tough was, if you are going to, as Audie was just saying, if you are going to tell the story and make it a tragedy and not, you know, the story of this rebel leader freeing, then you really have to do some work to get there. And mm-hmm. they just didn't do that work. And by not doing that work, they fell prey to all these tropes. Like, I mean, the amount of time like that Jon and Tyrion spent in a room just talking about poor Daenerys. Like, it does make a lady kind of worry about what men are talking about in a room. You know what I mean? But there were so many of those conversations of people discussing Dany and not doing the work of what actually that character was. And that's really hard. And then also I will say the sort of the loss of early characterizations that I really loved, like Tyrion, like the imp. Mm-hmm. Like I've written down in my notes, I have the imp, not fun.
Right.
I miss it when Tyrion was kind of this morally ambiguous, fun guy. Like the only thing that is left from that guy is the guy who is like, did you bring any wine?
Right.
You know, like he really right. lost the kind of shades to his character. And, you know, the same is true for a lot of characters that I loved. Brienne, you know, mm-hmm. I Glenn, you said this beautifully in your recap, that to leave her, this newly knighted woman, like sobbing after Jaime Lannister was just
in
so...
In a nightgown.
And not even one of the better Game of Thrones nightgowns.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't even from the
yeah.
Cersei
she
collection.
She did get to update his Wikipedia, though, and I
right.
thought that was super
she
sweet.
She was right in there just rewriting history for the man.
Yeah.
Write her own page.
Right. No, God
like,
bless.
Write her own page, right.
I mean,
yeah.
so that stuff I so blind on issues on how you build to the thing you're trying to do. And that was that I found really disappointing, because a lot of that early on was kind of interesting and fun. So
right.
so for me, it was the not just, you got to do the work.
So Audie, for me, the moment where in the last episode, not tonight's, but the one before this, where Dany alights with her dragon and looks up at the Red Keep
mm-hmm.
and has a weird look in her face. And then we think she's going to head to the Red Keep
mm-hmm.
and burn it to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And instead she strafes all mm-hmm. back and forth and back
mm-hmm.
and forth. That moment needed to be not just telegraphed, but like it had to land. It had
mm-hmm.
to be like, this feels surprising yet inevitable. And it was just surprising.
Mm-hmm.
What about you? Was there anything that, what was your main disappointment? I know this is negative.
But like, the main disappointment. Yeah. Listen, I'm not someone who's been deeply committed to the show for all these years. I watched the first two or three seasons, called it on I don't know what number rape, mm-hmm. and then disappeared mm-hmm. and came back for season 7 and 8. And guess what? That strategy paid off.
Because you missed a lot of rape.
That was yeah. meaningless. You know what I mean? Right. Like, Jaime Lannister, what was it all for? Mm-hmm. Brienne, what was it all for? Mm-hmm. You know, there's a bunch of stuff that now I'm like, okay, guess I was made the right call. Mm-hmm. You know, there's some dialogue. There's some sex position. Mm-hmm. There's some stuff that's not going to age well. Mm-hmm. The character arcs moved for any person of color mm-hmm. Or woman really didn't do a whole lot for me. I think it's cool that Arya is going to go be Christopher Columbus and colonize the rest of the world. And Stark Family Matters is really fun to me. I'm like, I'll go to all those spinoffs, sure. But, you know, I think what this show made us all ask about writing and in critiquing television is like, what does it mean for something to be earned? Right. You know, mm-hmm. what is an earned ending for a character? The character of Theon, who had been through a lot and then dies a heroic death, lots of people thought, oh, that seemed mm-hmm. earned. The character of Brienne, this woman who, you know, wants to be a knight, as you said, left tearfully calling after a man who's sleeping with his sister, seemed not earned, you mm-hmm. know? And I think a lot of the question comes down to, did they give you something that it felt like it was worth it to have been put through the ringer? Because they didn't just put the characters through the ringer, they put us through the ringer. And not always in a good way. And I say this as someone who, like, you know, I was one of those people who watched Lost, and, you know, there's a lot of people online who have joked about being Dexter fans or whatever. And I would say even Mad Men had a kind of ending mm-hmm. that was like, I think yeah. this was good. I'm not going to say Game of Thrones was the worst series finale I've ever seen. It just wasn't. But, you know, am I going to rewatch a bunch of episodes in my free time? Probably not.
Mm-hmm. Eric?
I had a weird reaction to the ending in that Dany is supposed to be this character who liberates all of these oppressed people. And she talks a lot about that before she gets killed. And then she gets killed. And all the people who were running stuff before she came to liberate everybody just divvy up the kingdoms and start running stuff again.
And laugh at the idea of democracy.
Right.
Laugh at the idea of democracy. I might as well let my horse vote.
Yeah.
And that's a joke. Huh? And then the Unsullied, which is the closest thing mm-hmm. you have to people of color on this show, gets sent on a boat off to God knows where. That overall message that, you know, to set it so starkly, the white characters decided that the person that was closest to a person of color among the core characters was getting out of line. They killed her. They sent off her followers. And now they're going to run things again. That's what I didn't mm-hmm. like about it.
Yeah, but also, Eric, she sucked. I mean, she mm-hmm. sucked from the beginning. Yeah. Like, many seasons back yeah. when she was, like, Daenerys Targaryen, like, liberator, it was always off. There was something always odd about
there
it.
There was always a weird
yeah,
tension.
Well, always
oh,
a
my
weird
God, those
authoritarian, her authoritarian tendencies.
Yeah, so
yeah,
I
there
didn't
was always
see
a weird tension between her
field.
Authoritarian
I just
tendency.
Didn't know if the way we got there was all that.
I'm not saying it's left field. I'm just saying that they threw it in our face at the end. Mm-hmm. This is not a democracy. Any character that comes close to being considered a person of color or someone who's oppressed, we don't care about them. We're just focused on the leaders, and
not even really, you know, the good ones. We're gonna rehire Tyrion.
Yeah.
Also, is there like a box of those pins somewhere?
Yeah, I know, right? Where do they come from?
That's the other thing to me is like, you know, in our society right now, it sort of feels like if you're wealthy and you're privileged, you can mess up 1,000 times and still retain your privilege and your wealth. And that happened in Game of Thrones.
For sure.
Which was weird to me.
Yeah, right. So let's talk about the fan reaction, because it has been, if you just go by what you see on the internet, it has been universally negative. But that is, A, provably false. There are people who love this show
yeah.
and continue to love this show, mm-hmm. and they're just silent. They don't go online and complain. And B, isn't that part of the deal? It's 2019. Part of the deal is engaging with the show in this way that we are doing in this room right now. We're challenging it. We're saying what we found wanting, what we were satisfied with. This is just the way we live now, right?
I wouldn't even call myself hate watching.
Right.
You know, I would often, I've definitely in my life found myself wondering, you know, looking out the window and like thinking about The Wire or Boardwalk Empire. That never really happened with Game of Thrones for me. It was just a thing I kind of engaged in. But it is fun to argue about a huge epic. Like the incredible just, you know, privilege, like privilege is obviously not the right, the incredible just
and
that we,
entitlement
that we all feel to, is sort of amazing. And I kind of actually, I giggle at it and I enjoy it. So thank God it's not perfect.
Yeah, exactly.
We're in this moment now with media and technology that people can reach out and sort of deliver their messages to the people who make these shows in a way that no other generation has been able to do. We have this sort of perfect storm where a show that is complex and well-made enough to inspire these kinds of feelings has met this technology that allows people to amass a petition that can land on the desk of the producers who made this show and say, here's where we think you screwed up. And increasingly, we have viewers who feel entitled, yes, to deliver that kind of feedback.
Right. I mean, I'll just say personally, I'm writing these crazy long recaps of this show, and I've been called a hater of the show, and that is a fundamental misunderstanding of what I'm doing. I would not be giving this much time and effort to a show that I hated. I love this show, and I love engaging with this show. I love thinking about this show. Audie, where do you come down?
Well, I think that it's an interesting moment for HBO. This show forced them to engage with streaming in a far more serious way. It forced them to have a real dialogue with the culture. I think they're used to sort of putting something out and being like, we're HBO, it's awesome. Engage, you know, and then they sit back with their arms crossed and are like, job well done. So to actually, for them to hear, like, actually, you know, it's good, but people would like to see this or that, or actually, it was good, but we really don't want these guys doing an alternative history of Confederate America past. You know, like, I think that's probably a good thing, you know, and I do like the idea of that. I like the Dem Thrones hashtag on Twitter. I have loved the kind of, like, black engagement with Game of Thrones, even as it does not engage with non-white communities, really. So I think that it was a really interesting moment in television. And, you know, there's so much out there to watch. Like the fact that we all still stuck it out with Boobs and Dragons is like, I don't know, maybe it was a little more than that. You know, maybe even folks like me who are really skeptics have to admit that there was something more to the show than we initially thought.
I do want to ask you guys a question. One of the things that struck me about the final season is that all the moments that we thought were going to be huge turned out to be very small. The death of the Night King, death of Cersei, even the death of Dany, they were all sort of things that kind of came out of nowhere, happened very quickly, happened, you know, without much preamble, even though in some sense, like the entire series was building to these moments.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's where I think they made their biggest mistake, was making so many of these pivotal moments, the three biggest moments in the final season, so small.
Well, to me, it felt like a season finale, not a series finale, for exactly that reason, because we got those three beats, those three plot beats that we were expecting, and when they came, they felt like boxes that got checked as opposed to enfleshed moments. That was my take.
Also, I will say with the Night King in particular, losing the thread of what that was all about, I mean, I really needed just a slight more of that myth kind of wrapped up. Like, are there no more zombies now?
I mean, I'll confess, I don't understand why there's still a Night Watch. What are you watching? But Barry, you had one more thing you wanted to say.
I really am glad that, you know, if we are all going to converge around the, you know, the television and the Twitter to argue and think about something, that it is something that brought together something that I love, which is dragons and fantasy and swords and boobs and medieval this and that. Like, this is not a thing I thought I was ever going to be able to share with my, you know, psychologically realistic Richard Ford loving husband, you know, like, but here we are. And so, like, there's this one fandom of, like, fantasy geeks and whatever, and we're, like, hanging out with the cool kids and, like, explaining to them, like, well, actually, that's not what the prophecy said and stuff like that. And I that part of Game of Thrones, I have really, really enjoyed. So, I, you know, to that end, like, well done.
Yep.
Well done, dragons.
I want to bring up, like, Samwell's sort of drops this book on Tyrion that's called A Song of Ice and Fire. So is he sort of like the fictional version of George R.R. Martin?
I mean,
is
that has been the subtext of that character from
I'm so sad it wasn't played, that there wasn't like a fast forward and it wasn't played by
yep.
him.
And actually, he should not have finished the book. That's the thing. It's like, it's not done yet, but hold on.
That would have been so cute.
It would have been perfect.
Oh, man. See, look at us writing.
Awesome.
We want to know what you thought of the Game of Thrones finale. Come and find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH and on Twitter at PCHH. And that brings us to the end of our show. You can follow Barry Hardiman at B. Hardiman. You can follow Audie at NPR Audie. And you can follow Eric at Deggins. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Love is the death of duty.
And of course, thank you all for listening. If you have a second and you are so inclined, please subscribe to our newsletter at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. Linda does a great job with that. And we will see you all on Friday when we will be talking about Aladdin.
1965, a darkened street corner in Selma, Alabama, and a murder. A new podcast exposes the lies that kept this murder from being solved.
And explores memory, myth, and accountability for a crime at the heart of the civil rights movement. From NPR, White Lies. Listen and subscribe now.